to Eat Drink Social. My name is Courtney Sandora, and throughout this podcast series, you'll be hearing from myself and the Go Social team. Go Social is a PR and social media marketing firm with offices in Denver, Colorado, and Louisville, Kentucky. We'll be discussing social media trends and influencer best practices in the food and beverage landscape. If you have any questions and want to reach out, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at The Go Social, or you can visit our website at goforthbesocial.com.
Today, we're joined with Sam Pence, better known as Served by Sammy on social media. As an expert bartender and mixologist, Sam shares classic and fun cocktail recipes for his over 300,000 followers across his social channels. He also shares tips and tricks for home bartenders to help others find their passion for mixology, whether they're beginners or masters of the craft. Welcome, Sam. We're so excited to have you.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm very excited to be here and to chat with you a little bit.
For sure. Well, just to kick it off, I'm going to ask you the first question just a little bit. If you could share a little bit about yourself and how you kind of found your passion for bartending and mixology.
Sure. So I've worked in restaurants for a long time. I worked in restaurants just sort of to pay my way through school, and I was always a server, and bartending was always kind of one of those intimidating, like hard to break into things where it was like, you kind of felt like the career people were doing that, like the people that were going to be in restaurants forever, whereas I was just sort of using it as kind of a means to get through school. And I was lucky enough to get a serving job at a local restaurant here in Boise called Solid, downtown Boise. And just so happened that I got hired about the same time as a world-class bartender named Brittany Poole. And she was a server slash bartender there that started about when I did. And so lucky enough for me, the bartender slash manager that hired me left relatively soon after I got there. And so I sort of stepped into his position, and I was managing the place. And I also was expected to bartend, which I had never done before. So fortunately for me, I was in an environment where I had to bartend. So that wasn't really a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And I just was around the right people. And so together with Brittany, I sort of learned the basics and how to make kind of the classic cocktails that everybody wants. And then I was pretty quickly able to kind of parlay that into coming up with my own recipes and really experimenting with flavors and learning sort of the history of things and how I wanted to kind of take what I knew from mixology and what she could teach me and build my own whole kind of thing out of it. So it was kind of a right place, right time sort of thing for me. I was very fortunate in that sense.
For sure. Yeah, that's super interesting. And of course, great timing, working with a world-class bartender at the same time. I'm sure you learned, so much and just soaked all that in. About how many years did you do that before kind of taking, your skill set onto social media?
Yeah, so that's an interesting one. So when I got the job and I started bartending, I was in a master's program at Boise State here, and I was doing the MBA program.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was doing that, my schedule was insane. I was going to school full time. I was doing a graduate assistantship, which was 20 hours a week. I was working a full time internship, and I was bartending. So I had like this insane schedule, and I was never home. And so as soon as school ended, I had all this business knowledge and I had all this like fresh, stuff, but everything dropped off my schedule except for my job. So I went from 70, 80 hours a week of like having to be on the go and having to do all this stuff to like, Right. Now I'm just bartending. And it was like maybe 35, 40 hours a week. And so there really was a sense of like, what do I do with all my free time? You know what I mean? And so it's kind of a funny story. There's a huge company that a lot of people have probably heard of called ClickFunnels that was founded here in Meridian, actually, but right near the Boise area. And Russell Brunson, the CEO of ClickFunnels, holds a convention at the Knitting Factory, which is a little concert venue right by, 30 yards away from the front door of the bar I work at.
Wow.
And so that summer after I graduated, they were doing a big event for funnel builders or funnel hackers or whatever they call them worldwide. And so for the whole week, there was like 5 or 6 days straight where I had all these like entrepreneurs from all around the world sitting at my bar talking to me about what they did and watching me make cocktails and all that stuff. And I mean, I swear 100 times over the course of that week, I had one of them sitting there and they said, you need to take this online. You need to build a course around this, you know? And then the very last day, probably one of the very last customers that was from that conference was sitting there and he was like, you know, he'd been there all week. And so I don't remember his name now, but during that week we were best friends. And he said, Sam, I just sat through a presentation from a guy who just made $2 million online selling a course teaching people how to open their own hot dog stand. And I was like, that's insane. He's like, so if you can make $2 million teaching people how to open a hot dog stand, there's definitely money to be made teaching people how to do something like make cocktails, because there's a lot more people interested in that than there is in people making hot dogs. And so that really stuck with me because it just kind of showed me that, one, I've got all these entrepreneurs that are very well versed in making money online, and every single one of them is telling me to take this online. And two, I think I had this idea in my head that you had to do something that everyone was interested in, right? Where mm-hmm. that's not really the case. I mean, I don't know if you've ever heard the term, there's riches and niches, but if you mm-hmm. pick a niche or whatever, and it's engaging enough and enough people are interested in it, you know, you don't have to have a million people buy something from you. You just have to have, you know, a dedicated group of people that are interested in that thing. So really, I mean, after that, I took a month or two of like planning and thinking about it. And then I really just started, you know, setting my cell phone up on a little like napkin caddy in my bar and doing like these really close up, just kind of shots of my own recipes that I wanted to make. And so really, I just started coming into work like, you know, an hour early before my shift, and I would film a little video and I'd sit there and edit it and post it. And I did that for a few months before I kind of started learning what I really was doing. But that was really how it started. I just had enough people telling me to do it that I finally just started, and I didn't really know what I was doing or anything, but that's kind of my origin story as you have it.
Yeah, that's an awesome, you know, kind of origin story and just intro into like, you know, real life, into social media and kind of, you know, that entrepreneur mindset of just finding your niche, finding something you're passionate about and exploring that. So appreciate you sharing that with us. So obviously on Instagram, I know you have such a huge following there, and you're also on TikTok too. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, just where you, how far you've come on Instagram, and also, you know, just taking your skill set into TikTok and what you've learned so far as a creator, and obviously your content is amazing, beautiful. It has such great engagement too, which is always, you know, the cherry on top.
Yeah, I've been really lucky to have the engagement that I do and to kind of build the community I have. There's a lot of kind of little pieces to unpack with kind of the transition from Instagram to TikTok and kind of how I got to where I am. I guess the best way to start is, being in front of a camera was never and continues to not be a comfortable experience for me. And so for the first few months, it was very like focused on this part of my body where the cocktail's sitting on the bar and my face isn't in and I'm not actually saying anything. Mm-hmm. And that was an easy thing to wrap my mind around because I could, you know, I could mess up and I could restart stuff and whatnot, but I didn't have to worry about like stumbling my way through sentences and trying to connect with an audience. And I dedicated myself pretty early on to studying what other content creators were doing, and videos with faces in them just were performing better. I mean, I had a spreadsheet and I had all sorts of like stats and stuff, and it just was a very clear trend mm-hmm. that I was going to have to start saying something in my videos at some point. So really what happened was, you know, I was in the same room I'm in here now, and I woke up with a wild hair and I just said, I'm going to try it today. And I mean, you could scroll down my page and see like it was not well polished. It was not well rehearsed. And it was very clunky when I started it. But I slowly got better at being in front of the camera. And I think that the thing that helped me kind of grow the engagement I have and really grow my channel in general is there was never a part of me that was like, hey, I'm a pro at all of this that goes into this, so listen to me. I very much took the approach of like, I don't know what I'm doing. So if I could do something better, tell me.
Right.
And my followers, I think, really connected with that because it gave them a sense of, instead of like jumping into someone's journey, like when they're already kind of there and made it and know what they're doing, I think it gave them more of a sense of like, we're here at the beginning with this guy and we're going to grow with him and we're going to watch him get better at this and we're going to give our input and we're going to be here for, you know, they felt like they were getting in on something at the ground floor. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so there's even like a handful of comments, you know, I had a guy or a gal or two that would be like commenting on every post until this account blows up. Or, you know, I am happy to say that I was like one of the first couple thousand followers. And so a lot of that stuff, one, helped me develop a habit of like interacting really well with my followers. And that really is what builds a community. Like if you DM somebody with hundreds of thousands of followers, you don't expect a reply. But when you get that reply, you're going to be that much more engaged in their next video and you're going to be that much more interested in what they're doing. And you almost get a sense that you know them a little better.
Yeah.
So that was huge for me. And then also, you know, I spent a lot of time just asking people, like, what do you want to see me make? Because it was pretty clear that like doing fancy like cocktails and stuff that I was interested in, and I thought like these flavors and stuff were cool. Like to me, that was what I thought was interesting. And what ended up being more interesting to people is like, how do I just make a basic margarita for my house? I've never done it before. Or I've got 10 people coming over. How do I make cocktails for all of them at once? And so it really was kind of a process of like me learning from them and them learning with me. And which really made it feel more of like something we were doing together rather than me just talking at somebody. It was more of a conversation. And so that's kind of like the general overview of sort of how I got to where I am and to the style that I have. As far as the TikTok and versus Instagram thing, you know, I think me and a lot of people sort of hear like, oh, just, you know, I think it was more prevalent a few years ago than it is now. But it was sort of, you sort of had that feeling of like, just get on TikTok and post anything and everyone's blowing up, right?
Yeah.
And so I think I went into it with the expectation of like, I'm going to do Instagram, but I'm going to blow up on TikTok. Like TikTok is going to be kind of where everything goes crazy. Because if you post enough on TikTok, then, and it really has sort of been the opposite. I think that my Instagram is by far the biggest community I have right now. TikTok actually is growing faster than my Instagram. So I think there will be a day where they sort of catch up to each other.
Mm-hmm.
But TikTok's a learning curve because, you know, Instagram reels are kind of built to compete with TikTok, but TikTok has a much younger demographic.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like I'm saying something negative, but I'm not. It's just the fact of how it is. TikTok is very much short attention spans, very quick. Like, I'm either going to get your engagement or I'm not, and you're going to scroll right past me or I'm going to catch you. So, you know, I still post the same videos on Instagram and TikTok, but I feel like I have more of a TikTok focus when I'm making my videos because it's so important. You know, you can scroll through 100 TikToks in 2 minutes and it like it's nothing. And so you really have to have something immediately in your video that makes people stop. And
right.
I think that mindset has helped me sort of make my reels and my TikToks better. And yeah, I mean, TikTok's a crazy sort of experience because, you know, so many people are blowing up for things that you look at and you're like, why is that? From sort of a general standpoint, you're like, why is this person popular? Why does this person have 1 million views?
Right.
But if you take a little more of an analytical look at their videos, like there's pretty clear patterns on like what people do that works. And I think, you know, it looks like we'll get into some of that stuff a little bit later, but it's just a whole other animal. And where Instagram reels and TikTok sort of look the same at surface value, they're very different, and they're very much separate sort of things you have to think about. And I think I also, just kind of last part to wrap this question up, I think that the reason why I thought TikTok was going to sort of be my bigger following and why it isn't that way is because a lot of what I do is like entertaining your guests that come over or when you're having cocktail parties and whatnot. And that's very much more of a 35 and older, or if, you know, a mid 40s like type of thing to be doing. Because when you're in your early 20s and whatnot, like you're going to the bars, you're going to the clubs, you're not so interested in like, how am I going to entertain 10 guests that come over? But Instagram's audience is much more tailored towards kind of what my content is also tailored towards. And I'm sort of trying to kind of balance that playing field a little bit and make content that kind of invites more people into it. But I think that that's the easy way to explain why Instagram has been more of a success than TikTok has for me so far. So
yeah. No, that yeah. I appreciate your response. It is super insightful. And I think I definitely agree with you there. I think on TikTok, it's more like, let me make this huge, crazy batch cocktail that you're really never going to make, but it's going to go viral, versus, yeah, you know, your content is more polished and it's more realistic to people who are a little more mature, who are maybe like late 20s, 30s, 40s, who are like, oh yeah, I would love to do this like espresso martini for my girls' night, or, you know, something like that.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think, you know, I think that there's just a little bit more of like an entertainment value to TikTok, as opposed to like going there to get an actual recipe or to get something you're actually going to recreate. It's more about like the quick cuts and the cool visuals, and the people are on TikTok to be entertained, which is good in its own right. I just think it's a little slightly different than what you see on like Facebook or Instagram or YouTube. So
for sure. Well, speaking of, you know, Instagram and TikTok and just kind of finding like what's blowing up, I feel like you've done a great job kind of tying into some of the, you know, more trendy cocktails, and also, you know, how to make those at home and just how to make it simple and fun and delicious. And I know obviously this year with tequila, and then also like espresso martinis getting so big. Now we're into pumpkin season. I know you've done a few, you know, fall themed cocktails. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, what you've seen, you know, as the spirits industry has changed, but also the landscape on social, and how you kind of keep up with that with the cocktails that you're creating on your socials?
Sure. I mean, so from kind of like a wide perspective, like making seasonal inspired cocktails is easy, right? Like it's easy to see the weather change and look at the weather forecast and be like, oh, it's 20 degrees cooler now than it was a couple months ago, and say people want pumpkin spice now. Like that kind of stuff's easy. I think the harder part is trying to time and trying to analyze like the industry as a whole. And so I think that a major theme, and I think the most valuable thing that I could say about this kind of portion of the podcast is things are expensive, right? And it's not just that going to a bar and ordering something is expensive. It's me being at the bar and ordering the liquor, our prices are way up, or us ordering food, you know, to sell people. So it's not like bartenders or restaurant owners or managers are sitting there and they're like, we can get a lot more profits. It's more like, how much can we raise our prices and still keep people coming in, and trying to negate how much more we're paying for everything?
Mm-hmm.
It's a trickle down effect, right? And so with that being said, I think that the demand for people being able to save money and make stuff at home is increasing very rapidly. And so periodically I post this chart. Is CNN or CNBC or one of the news channels does like a daily chart, and it's just about kind of, you know, interesting little trivial facts, right? And the cost of a cocktail over the last like 10 or 20 years in America is like skyrocketed, like four or five fold. And so it's not uncommon now to like go to a bar and order an espresso martini or a margarita, and you get like a $15 or $20 check, right? And so right. I think that the one of the reasons I've been successful, and one of the major trends in the industry, is like people are looking for ways to still enjoy the things they enjoy, drinking cocktails and having like that kind of experience, but not breaking the bank in order to do it, right? I think people in some senses are sort of scared of what's going to happen financially for themselves. And I think that they're a lot more reluctant to go pay an arm and a leg to have a nice night, drink cocktails and stuff. And so I think that's a huge, and I think you see it in food. I think you see it in all sorts of stuff on social media, where it's like the DIY movement.
Right.
It's really resonating with people right now, just because they can afford to spend $2 or $3 and make 20 cocktails at a time in a bottle or whatever, in a batch, where they would spend the same amount on two cocktails at a bar. And so that, I think that's the biggest trend I've noticed. It's definitely the biggest trend that I've tried to take advantage of. And I think it lends itself really well to kind of what I do, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. No, that's great feedback. I think definitely, you know, where we're at right now in society and the economy. So, and I think people are very much flocking to social media, using it just like Google, you know, searching for batch recipes that you can use. Like, it's a Saturday and you need something quick, and they're going to go to pages like yours and find something that is easy and great and, you know, cost friendly.
Yeah, totally. Well, and also, I mean, expanding on kind of what you said too, like with all the AI and with kind of all the advanced like algorithms in social media now too, is like SEO used to be a thing that people thought about, like search engine optimization used to be something that people thought about for their website or like on YouTube or Google or whatever. But the algorithms are so advanced now that it really is like, you know, I mean, once a week you hear somebody say like, oh, my phone's listening to me. They know that I wanted an espresso martini, or know that I was shopping for dog toys or whatever. And really what that is, that phenomenon is people not understanding how powerful the correlations between things are, right? So it's like, it traditionally it's been Google that can say like, oh, somebody that's connections that we would never make in our life, right? It's like somebody that ordered a flannel t-shirt or ordered this pen or whatever. It's like, we know with 90% certainty that sometime in the next month, they're also going to want to buy this water bottle or whatever it is. It's like connections that we could never make. The AIs and the algorithms are so efficient and so good at putting those connections together. And Instagram and TikTok are sort of up to speed with Google on that now. So it's like, if I make a video and I don't put anything in the caption, I don't write anything, I don't put any type of like hashtags or any of that stuff on it, those algorithms now still can hear what my voice says. They can analyze what the images are. And so it's just kind of like you said, it's like people go to Instagram or something and it already knows like, hey, we know with 99% certainty that sometime during this month, this person's going to want to see a margarita recipe and it'll just show it to them. It's, I think people underestimate how powerful the like algorithms and stuff are at estimating what these people want. And so I think you're right. I think people are getting more comfortable going to Instagram or somewhere for recipes, as opposed to just Googling them or whatever they might have done in the past, for sure.
Definitely. Kind of taking that mindset too, just like, you know, in your content creator mindset, what in your opinion, you know, do you have like your best advice or your best tips, you know, when kind of taking all this into account and deciding, you know, what content to post on your channel?
Like advice for other creators, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay. So I think there's two ways to look at it. So if your goal is to grow your channel as fast as possible, and you're somebody that has maybe like less than 5,000 followers, and you're saying like, I want to be an influencer and I want to have a following, right? I think that there's a few basic things that you can do that will help. By far the most important one is just making something and getting it out there, because no matter what you do, your first video is going to suck. You know what I mean? It's right. Like you can plan and you can take months of studying and knowing what you're going to do when you start. Your first 10 videos are still going to suck. The more important thing is to start making something so you can ignite that learning process faster and start learning from your mistakes quicker. So it's like the whole paralysis by analysis thing. It's like you can think and think and think and think, but at a certain point, you spend all this time thinking when doing would have got you twice as far. So the number one piece of advice is wherever you're at, just start. Just make a shitty video, because it's gonna suck no matter how much you plan it. Your 10th video is going to be better than your first. Your 100th video is going to be better than your 10th. Like you're going to get better the more you do it. As far as like details, I think the next most important thing is posting consistently, making sure that something in the first 3 to 5 seconds of your video is so overly engaging and captivating that people don't have any choice but to watch the rest of your video. I think that's something that I even am not great at, but I know the concept, and it's helped me in the past. But really, like, the success of your video, I would say it's 90% dependent on the first 5 seconds of your video and 10% dependent on whatever you have in the rest of your video. And that's why you see, I mean, that's really why you see, like, all these videos that are like split screen videos where it's like an interview or a podcast with somebody, but then the bottom half of the video is like a game or somebody drawing something. Yeah. It has nothing to do with the video, but it's like, it gives us a reason to keep staring at something long enough, and those videos do better. I think other advice is, in general, the shortest amount of time that you can give the most amount of information, the better. So don't cut out necessary information. If you're making a video, make sure that you hit all the points you want, but do that in the shortest video possible. So it's like, if I can, I could talk about making an old fashioned and make a 10-minute video easily. I mean, I could talk about the different kinds of bourbon and why we use certain kinds of ice and different options and origins and whatnot. But if you understand your audience well enough to know why they're on your page, like, they're on my page to get a recipe that they can go get ingredients for and they can go make. So for me, it's like, what's the shortest amount of time that I can make this old fashioned? Like, so for example, I made a pumpkin spice old fashioned that I posted yesterday or the day before. And it's like, I can show them and tell them what to make. And it's maybe like a 20, 25 second video. And that's all it needs to be. The rest of it is just hurting your watch time, which is by far the most important stat on whether or not your post is going to go viral or not. So Instagram doesn't care how many comments you get. They don't care how many likes you get. They don't care how many shares you get. They don't care how many saves you get.
Yeah.
None of that stuff really matters. What they care about is, you have a 10 second video. What's the average amount of time that these people spent watching that video? Is it 5 seconds? Because if it's 5 seconds, we're going to promote this video that got 6 seconds more. But is it 10, like, is your average watch time 9 seconds? Do you have a 90% watch time? Because if that's the case, then we're going to show it to more and more people. So it's easier to get people to watch a full video if you keep the video short. And especially if you do something super ultra engaging at the beginning of it. And then if you just start making something and you focus on the first 5 seconds of your video and you focus on keeping your video as short and to the point as you possibly can, I think that with consistency, it's only a matter of time before you build a big audience. I think if you do those three things, it's when, not if, basically.
Yeah. For creators, so. Yeah. That's great advice. I mean, for creators, for brands, I mean, you know, basically for any channel, just to keep that, you know, in your mindset. And then that's how you get your videos, you know, on the For You page or this discovery page, so people, you know, can see it and, you know, hopefully give you a follow and you know, start being engaged with your content. So I think that's excellent advice.
I mean, I think that it gets said a lot, but it doesn't get paid attention to a lot too. But you really, if you're going to be a creator, you really have to get yourself in the mindset of like scrolling through Instagram, but with a purpose, right? So it's like, scrolling through Instagram, and then when you stop on a video and watch it, it's really taking a mental note or taking a physical note of like, why is this the video I stopped on? What about this video compared to the five previous made me want to watch this video? And if you take those notes, you start to develop trends and realize what it was about certain videos that caught your attention very quickly. Like you start learning that stuff very fast. And then once you get yourself in that mindset, you almost can't help but to scroll through social media with sort of that in the back of your mind of like, oh, I know exactly why this video did well. And then trying to apply that to your own videos. It's always a learning process. But I think the better people are at constructively watching Instagram videos and analyzing what it was about certain videos that made them more interested in it, the better and quicker people can apply that to their own page and grow their own page.
Yeah. No, that's excellent advice. You're spot on with that. So kind of speaking of your content too, and just, you know, the recipes that you create and the content you create, you also have created some eBooks and cocktail books for your followers. Can you talk a little bit about that? And is that kind of something, as you look to the future of your channel, the future of, you know, yourself as a creator, entrepreneur, you know, something you'll do more of, or just how you integrate that with your brand?
So I'll say from from my standpoint, the benefit of doing the ebooks is it's cheap. So any money I make on it is all profit. I don't have to print anything. I don't have to, you know, I don't have to ship anything. And also the customer service level is really low. Like there may be a person or two that, especially with my age demographic, that's like, hey, I can't figure out the link, or I can't figure out how to download it, or like, where did my book go, or where's my spam folder or whatever.
Yeah.
But like, I don't have to do returns. I don't have to get on the phone with anybody. I don't have to call the post office or FedEx or whatever and see where packages are. So the ebook thing and just digital content in general, courses and that kind of stuff, is kind of the most scalable and the easiest. It's the lowest barrier to entry. Because, like I said, you don't have to hire people to help you with customer service. You don't have to rely on, you know, a shipping company to get your stuff there. And so I really like that. I will say that looking at it from the opposite perspective of like my followers and the people receiving my products, I know that they would prefer, especially once again in my age demographic, to like have something they can hold in their hand. And so it's a balancing act, right? It's like it can't all be about what I want. Some of it's got to be kind of about what they want too. And so with that being said, I do want to do like printed books, and I want to do, I've got some other physical products that I want to put out. I think more than anything, I'm using the digital products as a means to get to a place where it makes sense for me to do physical products, right? So it's like, if I can make enough money doing kind of these low maintenance digital products, that I can save that money up and reinvest that back into doing something that actually is like a physical book or a cocktail set, or, you know, I've got some other kind of cool things that I don't really want to spill the beans on quite yet, but it's like, if I can sort of parlay the money I get from doing these digital products that I can do by myself without a full team behind me, then that's kind of a good place to start and grow into like an actual brand where you have actual products and that kind of stuff. I think starting with that is very difficult, because it's like, if you think about the process that goes into selling a physical product, like, you know, if somebody orders a book, you know, somebody orders this book, it's like somebody had to write it, somebody had to take the pictures, then you had to get a publishing company, and then somebody had to publish it and edit it and proofread it, and then somebody had to ship it, and then you hope it gets there without any dents or tears or anything in it. But if it didn't, then you have to go through the process all again. And it's like, it's a lot more intensive than just making a product once that you can sell a million times. And so I think that eventually I'll get to a spot where I'm printing and I'm sending physical products out, but it's not going to be until I can afford the help that I need to do that. Because by the time you make content, develop these new products, and then you have to be responding to emails and answering phone calls and doing returns and shipping and stuff, it's just more than one person can do. So with my products, that's kind of where I'm at. And I think I'm sort of right on that edge where it's like time to start doing some physical stuff. And I know people really want that physical stuff. Like, how much do I have to charge? Like, if I sell an ebook for $25, I've got to sell a printed book for $60 or $70 just to make that $25 back. And people don't really want to spend $60 or $70 on a book. So I'm kind of right on that edge where it's like, I'm trying to figure out how to make it work, but where I'm at in my business, it doesn't really make sense for me quite yet. And that's less about being a content creator. And that's more just business practices that, you know, people try to be influencers and try to get into like, you know, getting followings and stuff. And I think that a lot of times we spend so much time thinking about like content creation and growing followers and all that stuff, and we forget that like followers are cool, but the only reason really followers are cool is because they're potential customers.
Right.
And then you have to start getting into the whole business mindset of like, okay, how am I going to take these potential customers and turn them into customers and keep them happy enough that they're repeat customers? And how am I going to put all these little parts together to make that happen? And so I think that is one of the biggest growing pains of going from being an influencer to being somebody who's like making money being an influencer, or, you know, better yet, having a brand as an influencer. So that's kind of where I'm at in that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's great advice. You know, great insight. I think, you know, we think it's so easy. We see an influencer like, oh, how did they get this? You know, they have their own, you know, clothing line now, but I feel like, you know, or they have their own, you know, they're making a RTD with a brand. They have their own, you know, bourbon brand now, but I feel like it's like these baby steps, you know, starting as a creator, but then, you know, getting into your own brand, you're, you know, being an entrepreneur, being a business owner. So it's a lot of work behind the scenes. And I know obviously influencers and, you know, people on social media don't get enough credit. So.
Yeah. Well, and I'll definitely say, like, if you're an influencer that has their own brand, either you're that 1% that can literally do everything all day, all at once, or more likely than not, you have help, which is great. I mean, that's what everyone needs in this space really is like, you just need to get to a point by yourself that you can afford help.
Yeah.
And then it's, you know, it's exponential how much you can grow once you have some assistance. So
for sure. Well, looking at, you know, your channel as well too, for, you know, just as you look ahead, you know, I know you've worked with, you know, several brands. Anything exciting, you know, on the horizon you can tease, or, you know, any future brand partnerships or goals for your channel?
I just got off a really cool call. Without giving too much away, that's kind of probably they wouldn't want me to give away yet. I do have some really cool content that will be coming out at some point with some really big brands kind of outside of cocktails, but still within that like entertaining guest realm. So I'm really excited to kind of expand that and sort of reach new audiences, as well as make content that's kind of more engaging for people that aren't only interested in cocktails, but more like, I've got 10 people coming over, I need to entertain these guests somehow, and moving some of those other pieces sort of into my universe. So yeah, I've got some cool ones coming up. I'm really excited about some of the brands. I should, you know what I should do? I should do a shameless little shout out to, so like I said, dealing with all this stuff and then trying to also get brand deals, which is kind of an influencer's bread and butter, because it's like, you're doing the same amount of work you would always have to do. That's actually how I met you.
Right.
Is doing these brand deals is the best way to make that initial startup money to do your other stuff, because you have to make videos anyways. Like if you're an influencer, you have to wake up and you have to make content anyways. So if you can make that content using somebody's product and get paid for it, you're doing the same amount of work, but you're actually making a profit on it.
Yeah.
So I would say that I was able to do okay for myself on brand deals, but the shameless pitch part is I've got a lady named Molly who works for a company called Cook It Media, and I just started working with them. So I have like an agent now, which is kind of crazy to even say or think about.
Right.
And their company is spectacular. Like they are spectacular. They've got me in the door with people that I would have never thought I would get in the door with. They've made my communication 100 times easier, and they've got me better rates and better money for the, like, if I was negotiating a deal with a company and they're than I would have ever been able to get myself. So with that being said, I've got cooler brands, better brands, more fun things that I'm going to be able to do now that I'm working with them. And so I'm very grateful that they sort of reached out to me and that we were able to make something work for sure.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. No, that's super exciting. I'm really excited to see what you have coming out. So I'll stay tuned. I know we'll be sure to stay tuned on your channel. I think just our last round of questions, just for something fun, just to hear a little bit more about you and your cocktail preferences. We have our speed round. So I will just kind of ask the question and give you like a 3-2-1 if you want to give the response, just so our followers can kind of get to know you a little bit better too.
Okay.
All right. Ready? So the first question, what is your go-to cocktail?
I would say whiskey sour. I like a lot, but also if I want something sweeter, a lot of times I'll go to like a amaretto sour. And I also really enjoy a Moscow mule. Like in the summer, I drink Moscow mules. But actually, sorry to make the speed round take a longer.
No worries.
I actually don't really drink very much at all. Like I would say I have a drink or two a month, maybe. It's very, very uncommon for me to be at like a bar or restaurant actually ordering drinks, which is kind of probably a surprising fact
for most people. For sure. Well, when you do have a drink, are you an on the rocks guy or neat?
I'm a rocks guy. I like keeping the cocktail cold. And I don't hate the idea of it getting like slightly more diluted as you drink it, because it just makes it that much easier to drink. I'm a rocks guy for sure.
For sure. So garnish or no garnish?
So I think making garnishes is one of the funnest parts about cocktail making, because you can give people sort of like hints as to what's in the cocktail, and you can make them look so much better. So I think the bigger and cooler and more unique the garnish is, the better for sure.
Awesome. What is your favorite brand or spirit of all time?
Okay. Favorite spirit, I'm a whiskey guy. I also think gin is really fun to mix with because it's so diverse from one brand to another. My favorite brand of all time is Chartreuse, just because, I mean, it tastes fine. It's not like, you know, it kind of tastes like, I don't know, it kind of tastes like grass liqueur. Like, it's very herbal and very green tasting. But the brand is just so rich in history. It's so interesting. I mean, I could talk for 10 minutes about how cool Chartreuse and the monks that make Chartreuse and the whole history of how that came and all the little intricacies of Chartreuse are. Plus, it's like impossible to find now. But if you guys haven't, take 5 minutes, Google the history of Chartreuse and read about it, because it is fascinating to me. So
that's what I'm going to do right after this podcast.
it's crazy. Chartreuse is crazy. So,
what are your top three qualities for a spirit?
Okay, top three qualities for a spirit. Obviously, taste is one. And I really like unique taste, right? So it's like, I mean, when you get a bourbon or whatever, and you kind of know what you're getting. But if you can do something interesting, like, for example, I work with a company called Oak and Eden that doesn't infuse flavors into the actual whiskey. So it's not like diluting down the actual like potency of the whiskey. But they use these wood oak like little spirals that they soak in a flavor, and then they put that in the bottle before they ship it. And so you're getting this like really cool, like earthy flavor, but also they can put like vanilla and blackberry, and like they do all these cool stuff with it. So taste, especially if you can do something unique with the taste. I would say just the overall like smoothness of it. Like if you drink it and it tastes like you're drinking like rubbing alcohol, that's a huge turnoff for me. Like it's so hard to mix with that kind of stuff, and because you feel like you're always trying to mask the flavors. And then I think an overlooked one for my third one is, I think, just cool packaging and cool marketing and like a cool bottle or something unique that like, it's really powerful for brands to be able to make something and then you finish it, but you're like, I don't want to throw this away. I want to keep this on my shelf. And then you're looking at it every day. And I think that's a huge part of the experience. And I think it's really powerful for brands for sure.
Definitely. Well, the last question, are there any brands you haven't tried yet that you would like to try?
Yeah, so I love coffee and I love coffee cocktails, and they do really well on my page. And so I just actually 10 minutes before I got on with you, I posted a coffee liqueur, like a homemade coffee liqueur video. But there's this brand called Mr. Black that I've been trying desperately to work with for a long time. And it's like, we almost get there and then it doesn't quite work out or whatever. So I'm really hoping to work with them. I haven't even got to try their liqueur, but it's supposed to be a very, very good, very high quality coffee liqueur. And I would really love to try it, and I would really love to work with them. So Mr. Black, if you're watching this, reply to my email.
Yes, please. I've heard a lot about them too. I mean, they look excellent. So, well, thank you so much. That was a lot of fun. Well, I think those are all the questions we had on our podcast, and really appreciate just all your insightful, you know, knowledge as a creator, as a business owner, as an entrepreneur. I feel like, you know, it's so complex. You know, social media is more than just about posting a video. So really appreciate your insight and joining us today.
Yeah, of course. Hey, anytime you need someone to talk a bunch, I'm your guy. So
for sure.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Sam. And be sure to follow Sam on Instagram and TikTok and at Served by Sammy. Sammy, you want to give another plug or anything else for your ebook or anything?
Yeah, go follow me. I've got a fall mini course coming out soon. I'm going to teach people how to make really cool fall cocktails and simple syrups. We're going to make rum caramel. I'm doing a batch hot buttered rum batter that you can keep in a jar or give as presents. That'll be coming out hopefully by the end of the month. So yeah, go follow me and you guys will get more than enough updates on my page about when that's coming out. So
awesome. Well, thank you so much, Sam. We appreciate you joining us today.
Thanks, Sydney. I really appreciate it.
All right, everybody. That wraps up today's episode of Eat, Drink, Social. Thanks for listening. If you have a story to share or know somebody that does, feel free to reach out to us.